Hi, I'm Courtney Wright, and this is the Lady Boss Podcast. Today, I'm really excited to present Annette Findling of Stonebridge Wealth Advisors. They're located in Chicago and Austin, and they focus on financial planning and wealth management for high net worth individuals. I think you're really going to like her. Let's go talk to Annette. Guys, in for a treat. Thank you so much for being here. Annette, let's get right to it.
Sure. Thank you, Courtney.
I don't know that many people would ever imagine the way you present yourself and show up that you grew up on a farm outside of Chicagoland, but can you tell the listeners how you went from being basically a farm girl to this sophisticated, high-style finance lady that you are?
Growing up on a farm was definitely a lot of fun, believe it or not, but my mom, I have to contribute a lot of it to my mom. She immigrated here from Germany, and while she was a seamstress, she was always really good at math. Hmm. And she just drove home when I was doing homework in school, you got to be good at math.
Interesting.
And obviously reading and writing was always, but she really put an emphasis on math. And so growing up, I loved accounting classes. I just love numbers. So I started my financial career in my late 20s because I love numbers and I love people, and I think that's like the perfect marriage.
Well, I would agree. I think there's lots of things you can do with numbers, but you have really grown an impressive business, and Stonebridge Wealth Advisors, I think, has a unique place in the market. And before we get to that, you went sort of what I call the traditional route in finance. You work for a big firm. How'd you make the decision to go to the firm that you were with for 20 years, and what did that really teach you?
Well, I don't know that I had a lot of, I just met people. I was in my 20s. I was enamored with it, and so I was hired, and I thought, okay, here we go. But I was in San Diego. I met my husband there, and I was hired by a large firm. And then I came to the conclusion and said, we were ready to leave San Diego and move back to Chicago. And I know I'm crazy, but in any event, I said to the hiring manager, I said, you know, I really want to work for this company, but I want to work in Chicago. So I started here, and I was surrounded, I just got started, and I believed in what I was learning. It was a great training ground. Back in the early days, I mean, it was a lot of hard work. We didn't have technology, so we had to do a lot of old-fashioned completing forms, cold calling, everything. So I didn't really interview at a lot of different places, but I just met people, and I just went with it.
So, Annette, you're at a big firm. You're a woman in what was predominantly a men's career at the time. How did you navigate that when you were a young woman in a very male world?
Well, back in the early 90s, it was very male, except for a couple of female support staff. But for those of people who know me and you know me, I like to be different. So being a woman in a man's world, I thought was a great opportunity, and it served me really well.
While I understand, and I think you're right, standing out is a great opportunity, you probably still received some resistance, whether it was from clients, because was she smart enough to handle my money?
Right.
Or internally, the boys' club didn't welcome you. Were there a couple of mentors that really kept, along with your natural drive, kept pushing you?
Yeah, definitely. I had three great male mentors, like, amazing. They're still friends today. And Bob was my direct manager. Marv was the regional vice president. And then Joe, who was old enough to be my dad, eventually was looking for a successor to his practice, chose me as someone to buy his business over time. So having mentorship, I don't care what business you're in, is really key. And so they helped me navigate all of that. It just was great.
Yeah, you were lucky. They wanted you to succeed, and we're going to talk a little bit about your acquisition shortly. So you were at that career for 20 years, the big institutional firm where you learned the sort of rules of the road of finance. What really gave you the confidence to take a leap and go out on your own?
It was more to get rid of the corporate agenda, if you will, and I'm not saying that to be, you know, it's good or bad. A program that I had was a member of for many, many years was called Strategic Coach. And it was about developing your brand, your unique ability. And when you're in a corporate world, they have their agenda, and they want you to fit in their box. Well, I kind of felt after 20 years, I just wasn't fitting in that sandbox anymore. And in our business at that time, successful people were leaving the big firms for that very reason and going what's called independent. So you're still with a big, large firm, but you don't have the corporate agenda. So we all truly operate as our own business, our own brand.
With a heavy focus on control, though, you know, you're a unique entrepreneur because while at the same time, I think entrepreneurs and youth particularly love having your own control. Talk a little bit about how regulation dampens that to some degree.
Well, I mean, at a large firm, it's all, you know, everything we do about advertising and, you know, all of that, everything we have to do putting ourselves out there has to be approved. So there are a lot of rules we follow and still that we have to follow today. And it really is for the protection of customers. And one of my old mentors said, he used a football analogy, he said, just always run down the middle of the field once you get to the sideline. So it's just staying on the straight and narrow and you know, regulations are regulations. It's something that I think every business has to deal with.
Yeah, for sure. You got the opportunity to do an acquisition of a book of business from one of your mentors. Would you tell us a little bit about how something like that's structured in your field?
Yeah, great. So in my industry, there's a lot of it's reoccurring revenue, right? So at the time, we were my partner had been, like I said, he was old enough to be my dad, and we were, his wife was sick. He was looking for a successor, and his wife said, Joe, you should look at Annette. She'd be great. I was always the one earliest in the office and the last to leave, so I really hustled, and I'm grateful that he chose me. It was a great opportunity for me. So what we did was, initially, it was important for him and me to learn his clients.
Sure.
So, again, I'm in my late 20s. I'm actually pregnant with my first child. Mm. And going out to meet some of these people who are in their late 50s and early 60s, again, gaining their trust. But Joe was such a big advocate of me, and we were always side by side. And I think that visual of having it being a team, and I was there for his clients when he was going through a rough time with his wife dealing with cancer. But we were partners for 7 years, and that really gave me the confidence to buy him out.
Sure.
So we did a valuation, and in my world, it's, you know, broken down. So that's how we worked it and did a buyout then.
Well, it's interesting. So I think you focus a lot on, you know, your success had a lot to do with some of your mentors, and then even your mentors kind of walking you down the field to be successful in an acquisition, which doesn't happen a lot. You know, every study I've ever read and been part of my own acquisitions, 8 in 10 fail. Really because there is no sort of baton handoff in a really great way the way you did. So congrats to you. That was amazing. Now, as you look forward, now, you know, you've left the big company, you've started your own company, you've got this sort of book of business you're dealing with. How many customers, when you decided to go from the big firm to your own firm, just couldn't pull it together and do all the paperwork to leave? And financial advisors, one of those things, you know, you get with somebody in your 20s and you may like somebody else you meet, but it's hard to move your money because it's time consuming. How many customers really came with you?
They all did. And again, it boils down to having relationships. I mean, there were a couple of really small clients, but my key relationships, they all came over.
That's absolutely incredible.
They all came over because it's a long-term relationship, and they don't want to start over.
Yeah, it's still very impressive. You know, I mean, I don't think you could really say to many salespeople, which, for lack of a better word, is what we are, where if they move companies, that they take their business. Everybody thinks they will, but that's an incredible testament to what you built and the relationships you built. What do you think is your secret sauce?
I've asked my clients, why do you want to work with us instead of some, or me, or in my firm, rather than someone else? And it's being authentic, it's being genuine, it's being really, I know that sounds cliche, but when you're there at for important moments in people's lives and they truly can see that you care, that's really critical. My clients are just not a number.
Well, I think so many people are scared to ask their clients why they buy from them.
Yeah. And it was scary.
Yeah, but it's really where you find out. And I think when you ask it again, you know, tell me again, and why did you choose me? You really get to the granular. And you know, obviously, as somebody that I know who works with tons of people that we're connected to, that's exactly what they say about you. Your commitment to the relationship and your creativity. And you know, ironically, finance and creativity really do go hand in hand. And you're obviously a very creative person. Can you talk about how that has actually helped you craft the formula that is so successful for your clients?
We start every relationship with doing a financial plan. And really what that is, it much like a business owner having to do a business plan, it's someone's personal business plan, personal financial plan. And most people in my industry, they either focus on insurance or they focus on investments or maybe they're a banker or they say they do it all. But we start our relationships with really understanding what do you want your family goals, your personal goals to be. And then the money and the insurance and all the products that we have are merely the tools to help you get there. That's what's different.
Well, that's pretty amazing. You know, I've recently heard there's a difference between a dream and a goal. And I liked it in that they said that when we have goals, it fires up our nervous system. And when we have a dream, it actually produces endorphins and we go toward it. Same similar concept. You know, as you look forward, what are some dreams or goals that are really important that you get accomplished in this next chapter of your career?
You know, people always say to me, like, people ask me that. Clients say, well, what's your, you know, goals going forward? Where do you see yourself? And I see myself doing more of the same, you know, and eventually, I see myself bringing in, much like what I did with Joe, the partnership that we had is bringing in a younger person to help me. I mean, I'm not ready to retire or anything, but it's that having that succession plan in place. We have a succession plan with my Leslie and my team. However, it's bringing in a younger generation to help transition over a long period of time. And again, like that's what was successful with Joe and I is that we were at least, you know, working together for 7 years before he decided to leave.
Yeah, it'd be a really fantastic closed loop circle to be able to offer that opportunity to somebody younger and mentor them through it.
Yeah,
and that mentorship has been such a big part of your day to day. I mean, you're in a kind of old school business in a way. You know, the kids today, if you will, are very focused on technology and things that are shinier birds than what you do. How will you attract somebody young to your business?
Oh, that's going to be, I think it's going to be tough. One of the things my mentors told me and that I still believe is so true today is if you see people, things happen. So think about that. So in today's world, everybody's on their phone or computer, right? And we have Zoom and all of that. So I need to find those young people that are able to have a meaningful conversation with someone one-to-one and look in the eye.
Is there anything that you can speak about relative to your team? You've grown the company. You've also grown it in a way where it's not people intensive. It's just few people, and I think that most people would be very envious of that. as a lot of businesses, to grow your business, you have to grow your staff. What are some of the things that you've looked for in the people you pick to work with?
So when I started working with Strategic Coach, it was really taking a hard look at myself and determining what my unique ability is, what I'm really good at, and what I'm really bad at. Right? We all want to think, oh, we're great people, we're great at everything. We have to look in the mirror and say, well, I'm really not so good at this. So when I've grown my team, it's putting people in the roles of their strengths are my weaknesses. And I think that's how you really build a successful business.
Yeah,
and I wish they taught that at school a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's, I mean, some of the thing why athletes get recruited so quickly because they actually observe for 4 years how teams work and how chemistry works. And I think it is something that we learn in our careers and what works with our style and what works without it. What did you determine is your secret sauce when you went through that exercise?
It's really connecting with people. It's being able to look at a stack of papers and look at a stack of statements and formulate ideas and the long-term visual plan that I have for somebody. But my weakness is I don't want to do the paperwork. I don't want to do the grinding stuff on the computer. I can do it. And it's being able to stand up in a really rough time, in whether it's the markets or in someone's life. That's what my unique ability is to connect with people.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, you just touched on something really important, whether it's with your team or your clients. I find that people have a really hard time delivering bad news.
Yeah.
And innate in the financial planning business, you deliver bad news frequently, depending
on
the cycle.
Sorry, you can't retire when you want to.
Oh, is that? Yeah. Okay. So all the way from divorce and that changing people's financial picture, as well as maybe them planning for retirement and realizing the world's an expensive place. How do you do that? How can you kind of maintain those relationships and deliver the real message?
It's delivering it in a way that you offer a lot of solutions.
Okay.
So it's talking to clients on, maybe if it can't happen the way that they thought it would be, the sooner people plan, the better off. They're likely to meet their goals. But we offer them solutions. So if you live on a little less, or you work a couple more years, or maybe you have part-time income. I mean, there's a whole lot of things.
Right.
And it's having that dialogue with people that softens the, oh, my gosh. And most people say, you know what, I actually feel a lot better. I have a lot more peace of mind because I know where I'm headed.
You know, it's funny. A lot of people, even if they can get their head around giving the message, soften it so much that at the end, the customer or the person you're speaking with doesn't know that they were just delivered bad news. Do you think you come away from those meetings and they actually heard the real story that they need to?
Yeah, I'm not going to candy coat it.
Okay.
But it's just delivering it in a way and offering solutions and let's work together. And it's you know, financial planning is a process.
Yeah.
It's not like you do it one time and you're done. It's always a work in progress.
Well, I know you're very much focused on young people and helping others. I think you're one of the greatest grower multiplier people that I know. You know, for young listeners, what would you say as they get after things in their 20s are really foundational game changers?
You know, I have to say I'm really, really impressed with a lot of the young people that I meet, whether it's through a lot of my clients' kids, my own kids, and they've seen their parents go through different times, like, you know, the financial crisis when they were in college and maybe their college funds were wiped out, et cetera. Young people are really impressive and they want to learn. They want to start saving. So the young people that I work with, we're doing that same process, the financial planning, the big goal planning, the big picture. What are your short-term goals, long-term goals? So, again, the sooner that someone starts, the better off they're going to be.
Sure. Yeah, it's a long game. And I think to the extent that you can, I think pushing it off is easy, but just getting started, like anything, any goal.
But the young people today are a lot more, they're more focused on that
thank goodness.
It's really impressive.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because I was not that 22-year-old.
Well, luckily you had
I got
your mom and your mentors
to get you
in line.
Yeah.
So maybe a final thought for our listeners. If you weren't the Czar financial planner that you were, was there any other career choice that would have been a close second? Or you, if you just could do anything, and you could do anything, but there were no time limits or objections, what would you be?
I would love to be a fashion buyer.
Okay, tell us what that means.
Well, I mean, you know, well, you and I share a love of fashion, right? And I think I would, or maybe even a personal shopper. If I could be any, like, to if I wasn't doing what I'm doing and I could just do that, that would be fun. It's, again, it's helping people be their best.
Yeah, we'd have to make that a hobby because you'd go from the world's best business model. I've been taught that
I know, right?
Annual reoccurring revenue is nirvana.
I love what I do,
first and foremost. Which is the worst business model you could be in. So, interestingly.
You're right. Well, you said.
Yeah, if you could be anything.
If you could be anything.
I think it's a great story. I think the way that you have always chosen to present yourself, put so much focus on, you know, your appearance and your clothing has been one of your big standouts. So it's no surprise to me that, you know, something related to fashion. I thought you would have said you'll buy the house of Gucci or something like that rather than be a merchant. But
I don't really know. But I also would love to mentor young kids. Okay. I'm trying to figure that out right now as maybe like a side volunteer kind of thing. I think to young women, young men. I mean, it doesn't matter. Just guiding them through all this craziness in the world.
Well, you are a mentor to so many people. You've been a huge influence in my life, and I appreciate that. I think that our listeners will take away that, you know, hard work, really having a vision, and staying the course are things that have been game changers in your career.
Yep.
And I appreciate you sharing that with us. You're really inspirational, and we look forward to hearing from you the next time on Lady Boss Podcast.
Always a pleasure to be part of the Lady Boss Group.